Welcome to Scottish Ballet's Half Hour Call.
It's a blood stage. Wipe them coming in.
Escape the backstage commotion and find a quiet moment in the dressing room of Scottish Ballet. In each episode, we'll be joined by special guests for a frank and unfiltered conversation about the world we live in and where a ballet company fits into it. In this episode, we explore all things social media. As Scottish Ballet senior producer Tony Curry is joined by Biscuit Ballerina and Royal Ballet Flanders soloist Shelby Williams and Scottish Ballet artist Harvey Littlefield.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your half hour call to the start of this evening's performance. You have 30 minutes. Your half hour call, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Half Hour Call. My name is Tony and I am super excited for today's conversation with the wonderful Shelby Williams. Hello.
Hi.
And Harvey Littlefield.
Hi.
So let's just dive straight into it, Shelby. For those who might not know, can you please tell us what a biscuit is and why you created an online persona dedicated to them?
So, a biscuit, I don't know how universal this is, but in the US, a biscuit is a term that ballet dancers would use for feet that are just not great for ballet, something that's not so flexible, doesn't have a great shape. And I was not born with the best feet for ballet, and particularly for trying to dance on point. So I always knew that I had biscuits. And in ballet, we tend to be pretty perfectionist about things. And I quickly found as a teen, when I was under that pressure of being a pre-professional student and trying to pursue a career in ballet, that I needed humor as a release to not take myself so seriously and get upset by the fact that as a human being, I'm imperfect. So I would exaggerate my flaws so that I could make a caricature out of them and see the humor in it. And later in my career, I did this all the time with friends and colleagues in the studio. When we had a rough day, we would just all kind of dance our very worst, just amplifying everything we were not doing well. And and then one day a colleague of mine recorded me in a 5-minute break doing my bad Shelby dancing, and she put it online on her Instagram. It got very popular, and I said, like, oh, maybe I'll start an account and I'll only do this because it's just so fun. And I decided to name it Biscuit Ballerina as sort of like an homage to the fact that I have biscuits. And that's like the source, one of the main sources of frustration for me as a dancer, is just dealing with the biscuits in point work and stuff like that. So that's where the name comes from.
Could you have ever imagined what Biscuit Ballerina was going to turn into?
Oh, no. Oh, not at all. It wasn't until, by accident, Biscuit Ballerina became popular that I started to learn more about social media. I was never someone who had a public profile online. I just made it a public account thinking that friends of mine from previous companies and from my training years would find it. And yeah, I didn't know how hashtags worked, for example. I just thought they were the most ridiculous thing. So out of just being a bit ironic, I used all the really common hashtags that people use for ballet, like beautiful feet and technique, lines, flawless, like all these things that were just, I was not. And unbeknownst to me, that was making it show up on people's feed. Like it was bringing attention to it. And actually to exactly the people who needed to see it, is all these people who were obsessed with trying to look perfect in ballet. And it just grew very quickly. And it made me very aware beyond just professional dancers, but also students and also people who even do dance as a hobby, how much there's a love-hate relationship in dance, with wanting to do it really well and not being satisfied with how well we are executing things, and how much there was a need for a bit more of a sense of humor around our flaws. So yeah, it wasn't that something that I set out to, you know, get a following or be an influencer or anything. It was really just me sharing my own coping mechanism with what I thought was going to be just my close friends. And it went a little viral.
I love it. It's honestly one of my favorite social media profiles out there. I think one of my favorite parts of the the Biscuit Ballerina Instagram profile is the kind of user-generated content where you show videos of other people's fails that have been captured. And Harvey, I want to ask you, can you please describe a biscuit moment from your own life?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think most dancers have a few. There was this one time I was doing an outdoor performance and it started raining. So the stage got so slippy very quickly and we were in these long white dresses. It was all men on stage. It was supposed to be very powerful. Everyone went down like dominoes and I was the first to go. Of course, I was the first to go. And it was like so comical. It felt like slapstick. I literally just went straight up. Whole body turned to the side and smacked down on the floor. And I was like, oh, okay, come on. Let's call it quits. Let's stop. But it was, I do have the video and I've always wanted to share it on my Instagram, but I'm just like, oh, it's quite funny.
Do you not want to send it in to Biscuit Ballerina?
Oh my God, I should. I never even thought about that. I should.
There's definitely been a dancer or two from Scottish Ballet who have sent things in before. I do remember sharing some photos. Like there was one of a dancer that he was in a rehearsal for some contemporary piece and like it was like in motion and he had full on crunched feet biscuits and it was like a very fierce pose except for the feet. I remember sharing that.
That'd be Tom Edwards. He loves a biscuit.
The feet. That's so funny.
And I'm Australian. In Australia, we call them cashews.
I think in the UK, we call them biscuits too, but we also sometimes say like trotters, like pig trotters. So we say like biscuits or trotters, but we use biscuit quite a lot as well.
Every country, you know, the dance community has a word for it. And I remember my Australian colleague saying cashews. And one of my friends from Argentina said they call them empanadas.
Because they're just, brilliant. That's so clever.
Bilingual biscuits.
Bilingual biscuits. That's a hashtag.
Yeah. Harvey, I have another question for you. And it's, what are some of the ways that you like to use social media, both from a personal and a professional perspective? And is there even a difference for you?
I think there is a difference sometimes just when you're sort of catering what content goes out, especially if you have, you know, younger people following you. But I like to put myself into everything I do. I think that's really important. And I think that's being authentically you is the best way to sort of succeed at anything in life. So I kind of merge them both together. I like to share, I like to share a lot of pictures of myself, how vain, but I think a lot of people are like that. But then I love talking about the LGBTQ plus community. So I share a lot about that and try and educate people as much as I can. And do you know what? Things like Instagram educate me all the time. I think it's such a great platform for actually learning, which is such a positive because not everybody is going to, you know, watch the news or pick up a newspaper. And if you're following like a source on Instagram that is like really, you know, they're verified 10 out of 10 times, hopefully, fingers crossed, it's like real and it's true. That I like talking about that. And then I remember I posted a video not so long ago, maybe 2 years, about me. I was practicing fuerte turns and then entrecha steps, which is like you beat 3 times in the air. It's quite a hard step for anyone to do. And I remember I was trying to do the sequence from Giselle. I think it's like 32 or something times. And I only got to like 16. But afterwards, the music, I was like, oh, this is great. And I started twerking and dancing. And I thought, do you know what? I need to share that because you don't, I feel like when I was younger, I didn't see many dancers share moments like that. And the response was great because I got a lot of teachers saying they showed this to their kids. And it's like, you have to have that balance of having fun, but also working hard. And I think in that video, you really saw the 50-50 of I'm working hard, I'm actually trying to like get something correct, perfect something, but also I showed my flaws and I showed how I dealt with it and like turned it around.
Oh yeah, I think that's like a perfect example of maybe what social media should be, is inspirational and relatable at the same time. That it's like obviously seeing how hard you work and seeing your technique and you as a professional dancer, what you could achieve, but then seeing, you know, when you don't get all the way as far as you intended, that, you know, relatable, like we don't always achieve our goals right away the first time. So I think what you just shared is a perfect example of my idea of the best way social media can be.
Shelby, you've kind of led perfectly into the question that I had for you next, which was around what role you think social media has or maybe should have in a live performance industry like ballet?
I mean, there's so many different sides of social media. I think from a marketing standpoint for companies, it is an amazing tool to reach audiences that you wouldn't normally be able to reach and just get people intrigued about the art form. At the same time, social media can never replace the art form because a live performance is something so unique. You're never going to get the same thing every time. You cannot replicate the feeling of being an audience on a two-dimensional screen. But it does open up a window into our art form. Also, behind the scenes, there's a lot of behind the scenes content that you get to do on social media that otherwise most of the audience would never get to see. So I feel like it's a great way to get a more genuine appreciation of the work that goes into being a ballet dancer, professional dancer in general, from that standpoint, as well as much as like lifting up the art form. It's such a useful tool. But I think then also for people who are in the art form, so the students or the professional dancers themselves, it also has that positive aspect that you can get exposure to choreographers you've never heard of or companies that you will never get a chance to see because it's just not possible to travel the entire world and see every company. So it's a great way for us to kind of globalize ballet, that we're much more aware of what everyone else is doing around the world. But also that leads to comparing ourselves to other people around the world in a very much curated context where you're not seeing the full picture, you're seeing the chosen side of dance.
I think what you said about making it more like the globalizing it and it becoming mainstream is really important, like now, especially because I think a lot of people are so opinionated on what a dancer is and what like they get up to, and they just see it so black and white. I don't think they realize that we do actually have so much fun, and it's like, it's an incredible industry to be a part of. So social media, I think, is great for, like you said, letting people see us backstage and see us enjoying what we do, and it not being so like, this is a dancer, it's like one class of people, one type of person, you know. And I think social media has definitely helped the mainstream public see ballet in a different light, for sure.
Exactly. And also what you were saying about that, it shows them that we're not all the same. There are some dancers who maybe fit the stereotype of what they would think, like super disciplined, like quite limited in their social life because they really shape everything around their work. But then there's also people who have maybe a different balance of their work-life balance, and they have a very full social life, and they have a personality that's not what someone would expect of someone who works in such a disciplined art form. And that even rolls into things like gender norms or racial issues or like all these social issues that can also tie into stereotypes that are very much ingrained in classical ballet, for example, in a lot of ways, that we get to show them, like, this is a modern world. Ballet companies still preserve the classics, but the people behind it are modern people, and they're all very different.
I think that's probably my favorite thing about social media, is seeing other people and knowing you're not alone. Like, social media can be a very lonely place and can be a scary place, especially if you don't have like an in-person support bubble. Yet it can be so wonderful, because I think, you know, especially young kids growing up, they do just see everything sort of 2D, and they go, okay, this is the way I've got to be, you know, especially learning about dance. So Margot Fonteyn, she was like this, I've got to be like this, and they only go one direction. Whereas I remember when I first got Instagram and I started seeing videos and I saw like dancers in America, for example, I don't know if I'm going to say his name right, but I think it's James Whiteside or something like that. I think he's a dancer in America. And I saw him wearing a crop top and I was just like, who? I didn't even know this was allowed. I was so ecstatic. I was like, it was brilliant. And then I think, you know, he inspired me a lot with just kind of being like, go out, be yourself. There is no right or wrong in this industry. Yep. Sadly, we're made to feel like that sometimes because of how hard it is and how dedicated you have to be. But it's great to see people being themselves. And I think we need to share more of that online.
A question for you both is, how do you balance personally on social media? How do you balance that sense of authenticity where you feel like what you're the person that you're presenting online is true to who you are, while also having healthy boundaries in place and protecting yourself from maybe people outside of your community that don't understand or appreciate what you're trying to do.
It is a tricky thing that requires a little bit of awareness on different levels. There's like safety in the sense of you can find out a lot of personal details about someone online if they share a lot of personal details. So things like that, for my personal safety, I never share anything publicly that has anything to do with what my apartment looks like or what part of town I live in or live feeds that say exactly where I am when, unless it's for a company event where, okay, we're doing a workshop for the public today here, which is a safe environment. But I don't do things where I'm like, I'm out to dinner right here, right now.
I think it's just like being like really mindful. And a lot of these platforms do have great tools to put in place to make sure you can like set things up where, you know, now when you post a story on Instagram, you can decide who sees that and who doesn't. And little things like that, I think, are really great. And it makes being online a lot safer.
But then also, I mean, online trolls, like, you can't always avoid them.
They always seem to find you, yeah. Don't they? Somehow they always find you, no matter, even if you block everybody on the planet, an online troll will pop up and say something horrific.
Yeah, but I think with, like, online trolls, of course, there's always the potential that there's, like, some, I don't know, sick person who's going to go very far. But I think as long as you don't have personal details that person can track you down, it's just someone who's hiding behind a phone. And so any trolls, I take it with a grain of salt. Of course, sometimes it stings when there's like a hint of truth to it. And you're like, you're right. It didn't look that good. But you know.
It can be humbling.
Yeah, I think the balance of like real world support bubble, like you were saying about having friends and community around you, that balances out, that if someone's a little bit shady towards you on the internet, your friends will be like, ignore that, you know?
Yeah, it's like even nice to have like the people you work with, like company members, like your friends at work. It's you have your little bubble and they'll make sure like you're protected. And I also think if you're just, you know, a mindful person and you try to like install faith in yourself and like just believe in you, and you know, you protect your energy and all that, like you'll be okay. These things at the end of the day are horrible to hear and see, but I really believe that people are much more powerful and stronger than they think, and like we can do a lot for ourselves that, you know, will protect us at the end of the day.
I think something that's really kind of interesting about that, you're talking about like the follower influencer and then kind of real world influence these people have, is having a big following on social media does not necessarily mean you're smarter than anyone else, you know? And I think our culture has come to think that people who have large followings have to make statements about things, and maybe it's not always going to land the right way, or maybe, you know, they don't really have an opinion on it and feel pressured to say things. And I know definitely I try to just be genuine and speak from the heart about what I think about things. But sometimes I'm like, that's not my area of expertise. You run into dangerous areas with that. Sometimes, for example, I think particularly in dance, with people giving like health advice, that's very personal, that's very unique. And there's also a long history of, you know, eating disorders in ballet classically. And that's something that has come a long way. We have like a lot better understanding of modern nutrition today. But there's people out there with a following, and then they start telling you their dieting habits and things that just like any nutritionist would be like, do not follow this person. And you've got a nutritionist who doesn't have a social media following, but they went through training, they're professionals, they know what they're talking about. And you should be listening to that person who's got, you know, 98 followers and it's all their friends and family, and not this person who's got 300,000 followers and just happens to be an amazing dancer or like a fitness influencer. So I think that's one place where this real world influence of people who have followers and people actually listen to them can get a little bit dangerous.
It must be so interesting. I mean, I definitely consider myself more in the follower camp on social media. I'm certainly not an influencer by any means, but I imagine it would be quite an interesting and sometimes challenging position for somebody who is in a position of power on social media, because on one hand, social media isn't real. You know, as you're saying, having that in real life community is really important for you. But at the same time, there's this dichotomy of the fact that social media has become very much a part of our real lives. This kind of blend of the real and very much filtered and curated side of our lives as the lines have been blurred, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It can be quite frustrating, even in the sense of like when people comment on what actual dance is and like what is good dance. I feel like people tend to just go for the numbers and for that sort of the blue tick, the verified, the celebrity. And most of the time what people share who have this sort of influence on younger people and anyone in general can be wrong in the dance world. I mean, I've followed some accounts and I go in thinking, okay, they're a great dancer. I've seen one video they've posted and I'm like, you're amazing. And then on their stories, there's stuff they're talking about wrong terminology and just not for the dance community. It's very against it, actually. And I think that's a dangerous side of social media, is that that's hard to control. You know, everyone can have an Instagram account. And just educating yourself to see who you are following and how much of it you're taking in as well.
Yeah. Also things I think of, for example, also dance teachers or dancers online who give like stretch exercises for people, like how to improve flexibility. And I, some of the stuff I see, I think, ooh, someone's tearing a hamstring somewhere in the world right now. Like,
yeah, I remember, oh my gosh, I remember at school, I would see like people put their legs like doing oversplit, like on the most... These days, people don't oversplit on chairs or foam rollers. They go like way beyond that. They'll put their leg on the kitchen table and overstretch. And I'm like, that's great for you. My legs do not go that high. But I think that's also like pretty dangerous. And especially for what we do as classical dancers, as ballet dancers, it's not going to really benefit, I feel, in our industry. You can lose a lot from that amount of overstretching. You know, I remember I got into it a lot at school and I used to try and like... try and push it and push it. And as a man in ballet, I should be able to jump quite high, but my balance started to decrease because I was overstretching and like really trying to get flexible. That when I was younger was not a great thing to be out there. I just remember seeing it all the time and everywhere too, like overstretch, 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 and it can be quite unhealthy.
I mean, there's so much of that with social media. When it was more still photos, it would be people editing their photos. With videos, in the sense of dance, I mean, there's different things that people do. It's like you can take a million takes of doing something and then just share it. And it looks like, oh, you know, that 8 pirouettes is so easy for this person, where it was like a one-off after 3 days of trying to film. And it's not that you're going to go see a show and like, bam, every show they're hitting 8 pirouettes. So that's a little bit deceiving, but also I think it's also part of the art, is that like dance on film can be different. And so this whole thing of using dance where they zoom in and out of the dancer, that definitely makes for a much more interesting video. But if you just had like a still shot of the person dancing, you see a very different like clarity of what are they like as a dancer, not what's the special effects around it. So I think that has the potential to intimidate people and give them the wrong idea of, for younger people, what they're aspiring to, and thinking it's not attainable because these people are just on such a higher level, because they're not seeing any of the flaws, they're not seeing the mess up, and they're not just seeing like a very clear picture of what they look like when they're working on an average day. But also for the audience, that they see something, I think, if it's a little bit too curated and you're showing, it's like a movie trailer that shows all the best parts of the movie. And then you go to see the movie and you're like, oh, all the funny bits were in the trailer and like the rest of the movie wasn't that great. And I always get worried about that. Like if on social media, if I share like all my best moments, someone's going to come see me a show and be like, oh, we saw all the best stuff online. So I feel like there's a little balance there. That's like there's the upside to being more real with what content you show, because in the real world, when you engage with these people and interact with an audience and stuff, you want them to not feel like they've been conned, imposter syndrome, but you made yourself out to be this huge thing because of the way you curated and edited and played with your portrayal of yourself online.
And I imagine a lot of the time what you're seeing, you know, this quote unquote gold standard of flexibility, it might not even be real. That might be cheated, so to speak, and that you might see that split from a different angle and you realize that actually they've totally faked it and it's just for the camera. Harvey, you've just been appointed one of Scottish Ballet's Young Friend Ambassadors. Can you tell us a bit about what that means and also describe what kind of role model you want to be for young dancers?
I'm really excited that Scottish Ballet have done this. And I think for me, hopefully I'll inspire the younger generation, but in this, you know, regards to being a role model, I want to create a safe environment for kids in the ballet world, because I think a lot of us previously, like younger generations who are now like in their 20s, 30s, back then we didn't really have anyone to look up to, and that was of like the age of 19, 20, 21. And I think I just want to be a role model that makes people feel safe and seen. That's really important. I think when I was younger, I would have liked to had someone to look up to and go, okay, I feel seen, and I know there's somebody else out there in the world that's like me. And if I can do that for any of the younger generation, then I feel like I've served my time on planet Earth.
Brilliant. A question for you both. We've talked a lot about perfectionism. This might be a short answer, but does ballet have a perfectionism problem? And if yes, then in what ways could social media help change that?
Yes. the short answer is yes. There is a big problem. I think also the fact that technique keeps progressing because sports science progresses, and there's all these ways for us to get closer and closer to this idea of perfection, like the perfect arabesque, the perfect pirouette. But it becomes an obsession. It takes away from the artistic side of it. I think a lot of dance teachers will say that also, that I remember even when I was as a student, some of my teachers would always talk about, you know, the names of all these famous dancers from previous generations and say, you know, their technique wasn't everything, but my gosh, how they could perform and what an artist they were. And I do think that our advancement in our field technically has kind of stimulated that hyper-perfectionism. And I think social media, if people can focus more on artistry, that's kind of the hard thing to do in a two-dimensional way, because I think it's experiencing someone in person where you really feel their expression. So I think that is a challenge that we'll be faced with. How do you keep the focus on artistry?
Because it's like, it's almost like ballet has become a bit tricky sometimes. Like people do these tricks and it's like legs up here, like, oh my gosh, I don't even know what some of the male dancers do now, like these 540 things. Like I've never even attempted it because it frightens me actually. But to me, that's not very artistic. It's impressive. And I'm like wowed when I watch someone do it. But I think there's a lack of artistic quality at the moment because of social media and because of like these instant, you know, gratification posts that happen. And it, like Shelby said, I don't know how we can or would, like on Instagram, show artistry and get somebody engaged with that, because it's very difficult. It's a very personal thing. And I think you have to be in a theater, in a room, like watching somebody and feeling, you know, the energy that's going on. But I hope that ballet sort of does a 180 and goes a bit back to being more artistic and more about making an audience feel something, and the escapism in the dance world, because that's so important. It's amazing to see like legs behind ears and everything, and it's beautiful, but at the end of the day, I think we're here to tell stories, and we're here to be more on a personal level to one another.
And I imagine, you know, nailing a show might feel fantastic, but that isn't necessarily why you do it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, 100%. I think I dance is one of these things that I think most people question why we do it, because there's so many factors to it and there's so many things that are hard and difficult. But for me, it's always been about that escapism. And, you know, when I was younger, I used to watch people like Goldie Hawn in films who would like just make me laugh, make me cry. You know, if she was doing a dance sequence in something, I would be so, like, I would literally escape. I would not be living in reality. I would be so into what I was watching. And I think in this day and age, that's so important. Escapism is like needed. We don't live in a very nice world anymore. And I don't really know if we ever have. So I think for me, when I perform or I do shows, I really try to channel that. And I want to be that for people. I want them to escape and to have a moment of like, you know, just being totally here in the present moment and not having to think about the horrible world or anything. The world is great, but sometimes not. I'm making it sound like it's awful. Like, are aliens listening to the... No, Earth is fine. Come visit. It's great. So,
disclaimer, it's not that bad.
Yeah, but I think I feel a bit the same as Harvey, that escapism is so important to just give people a break from maybe rough moments in their life, or just, you know, to have something exciting. It's a beautiful experience. And so something I love about performing is not, like you said, trying to be perfect every day and then coming off of a show and being like, nailed it. It's the whole thing is I love to feel something when I'm performing, and I love to be carried away and I escape in my dancing. Like, it's also for me. And then I love when I get to talk to audience members and I learn about how they escaped. I love hearing about what the piece made them feel, where it took them, how it maybe connected to some of their personal experience. I find that to be one of the most rewarding sides of this profession.
Mm. And I think, on stage, in moments of imperfection or what we wouldn't consider, correct in the ballet world, you sometimes find something so beautiful, especially in live performances. Like, these moments will just happen, whether it's yourself, a solo, with a partner. These incredible moments happen, and it's actually sometimes due to being imperfect, like these little mistakes that happen. And those, I think, are I live for those moments on stage, because you don't know when or if or how they're gonna happen. It's just, they catch you by surprise, and that's for a dancer, I think, really just, you feel like you've created something and you feel original and you feel really special, I guess.
Yeah. All the more reason to go see a live show is to catch these moments, because you can't replicate them. And I can't think of a single time I've watched ballet on social media and cried, but I can think of so many times I've gone to the theater to see a show and cried, either because it was so beautiful or because it was so touching. Not that crying is the ultimate goal, but just as a, just as a measure of what emotional level did we get here to today. So
I know, even just this morning, I wish sometimes at Scottish Ballet we have people come and watch class, which I think is so important and so great. And I think, more people should just even email companies to go and watch company class, because it's quite a beautiful thing sometimes. Like this morning, I was just in awe watching Sophie Martin, and she's leaving us soon. And she's one of those dancers that just makes you feel everything. And I don't know, she really has captured that sense of escaping into dance. And even today I was like, oh my gosh, I was transported somewhere else. I escaped. I got away.
Yeah, it's so true. I love also, watching my colleagues and friends in their daily ritual of, how do they start their day? How do they do their training? How do they approach ballet class? And it's just,
there's so many great moments in class. I find we're a funny company, and I love that about us, because it really helps get through the week if we have a hard week or someone. Everyone's got a sense of humor, and when you let that out in class, it's really special, and it's really important just to have a laugh and not take what you do so seriously. At the end of the day, we are just trying to dance, and we are just trying to have fun and inspire people. And I think the best way to do it at the end of the day is laugh and just be you.
We're a bit the same at Royal Ballet of Flanders. So I hope one day our company is on tour at the same festival and we just merge. We have just a fabulous, funny dance class together.
Oh, I really hope that happens. I feel like our energies are probably very similar. Giggly. Yeah. I giggle a lot. I can't be professional, but I do giggle.
It's so important. We have such a good laugh at work, but it's that thing of exactly how long the laugh needs to last. Yeah. And then everyone's kind of on the same page, okay, let's be productive now.
Yeah.
Let's
get back into it. Yeah. I think we're very smart dancers, intelligent people. We know our boundaries.
Emotionally intelligent, physically intelligent, all sorts of intelligence. That
street smart, transferable skills. We've got it all.
Wise. We're just talking about the companies. Such wise dancers. This is how we can enjoy our career.
So I have another question for you both, and that is, how would you describe a healthy relationship with social media from the perspective of somebody with an audience, with a considerable following?
I think being able to manage the feeling or not feel pressured to have to be on social media. The fact that social media feels like a choice, you share when you want to and when you don't want to, you don't, you know, you don't pressure yourself to create content because there's a deadline and I have to be online. I've found, because I know there was a moment when Biscuit Ballerina started to get very popular, and then I felt this pressure like, oh, I have to post everything, like every week I need to be pretty consistent. And then I realized, you know what, this is actually stressing me out. It started off as something just like fun and silly and that brought me joy. And now it's put way too much pressure on me. So I just took a break of like 6 months and I was like, sorry, don't owe anyone anything. And I think that's, I don't know, for me, that's a healthy way to approach social media, is if it's stressing you out, it's not good. Take a little breather from it.
I think just little breaks and like Shelby said, taking time off. I mean, it's the most mindful thing to do. And yeah, we don't owe anyone anything. We don't have to post. We don't need to be on it at all. But I think I'm the same. When it gets a bit too much, I even sometimes like go through who I'm following just to remind myself, like, do my values relate with them? You know, what they're posting, is it benefiting my life? Because sometimes I've been following people just for the sake of it, and actually like would compare myself to these dancers that I'm nothing like. You know, I'm 6'3", they would be like 5'2" and completely different bodies, then there was no reason for me to be doing that. And it's just about like taking a moment, stepping back and going, okay, I don't need to compare myself to them. I don't need to follow them just because they're big in the ballet world, or everybody is following them, or like, you know, they're posting great videos. It's, I think, just again about being super mindful and really like, yeah, being aware of your socials, but also just completely disconnecting.
I totally agree. And whenever I talk to students, because a lot of students are really big on TikTok and Instagram, and kind of the golden rule I tell them is, if someone makes you feel bad by following them, if it's making you feel bad about yourself as a person, if it makes you jealous and it brings out just bad energy, unfollow them. I think social niceties of I have to follow you because you're following me, even that sort of thing, like, it doesn't matter. Take care of your mental health.
I think we've like made it so personal, right? Like we've made it too personal in a way. It's like people get into fights with people when you unfollow someone. Like I've had people come up to me and be like, why did you unfollow me?
Rude.
And I go, oh my gosh, like I actually, yeah, I'm like, I don't know you. Some people, you follow them and then you meet them and you go, I don't actually know you. And it's weird. So I think just like, yeah, making it less of a formality thing.
I mean, I've also even have like friends and colleagues of mine here that their target audience, they're selling a brand of, you know, themselves in a certain way. Some of them do like modeling, or some of them do teaching, or like do other things. So they're like marketing that. And it's like, I see you every day at work. I don't need to see these like, you know, info things that you're putting up. And so I unfollow them, and they know it's nothing personal. It's just like, I'm not your target audience. You know, I'm just your colleague. So no big deal.
Yes. Oh my God. We don't need to see that.
Sometimes you just see one too many thirst traps.
Yes. I didn't know if I could like say that. That was a little bit the direction I was going. It was like, I'm really, you know, like, as a woman, I'm not your type. So.
Especially when like the ballet world and thirst traps like combined, I don't want to see any of that kind of stuff. So I just like, I have to unfollow. Like I don't need to see you lifting weights and like trying to be sexy. It's not, I don't need that on my timeline.
Harvey, didn't you just post a photo of your naked butt in Paris?
Oh my God, I did. I'm so hypocritical. Yeah, but that was actually, for me, it was so self-empowering.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your Act 1 beginner's call. Ladies and gentlemen of the orchestra, would you please make your way to the pit? Your Act 1 beginner's call, please, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
So this brings us to our beginner's call, where we give you both the chance to reflect on where the conversation should go next. So a final question from me is, what changes do you hope to see in our industry's relationship with social media?
I guess for me, maybe less like labeling in boxes and stereotypes. I think maybe just it being a place where things are put out there, and it's almost just, you know, of course, if it's positive and it's a good thing, maybe just accepting it instead of, you know, questioning it, you know. And that can relate to anything, dance wise gender, sexuality. I think we almost need to just demand a bit of respect now and say, you know, not everybody is the same, not everybody is one way, so I'm going to put this out here. And it's almost just like, instead of it causing controversy, just respect it. Let it be. If it's not affecting your life, just let it sit there, because everything needs a place. And I think everybody needs a place to put things and just exist peacefully.
Very wise words. And you, Shelby?
I would just hope that through social media, dance is represented in a more authentic way, that it becomes a little bit less curated, and it becomes this balance of, you know, inspiring and relatable, but also acts as a kind of call to action that inspires and pushes people to engage in real life. I think that it's easy to get stuck behind a screen and, you know, film things in a studio by yourself or watch videos for hours on end on your phone. It's very different to go in the studio and work with people or go to a show and see people in real life. So I hope that it evolves into not something gets you stuck on your phone, but something that makes you put down your phone and go actually engage with other people.
Brilliant. Such a fantastic point to end on. I have absolutely adored chatting to you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Shelby. Thank you, Tony. This was so fun.
Thank you.
We'll see you on the gram and on stage soon.